And speaking here with Chuck Spencer, Growmark Executive Director of Corporate and Government Relations. Well, Chuck, we're going to talk about a recent trip that your board members took to Washington, D.C., where they met with some members of Congress there and talked a little bit about issues facing them. First, tell us what that event was where your board members were gathered in the nation's capital.
Yes, annually, the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives holds a Washington, D.C. fly-in and issues conference. And, you know, it's unique. The National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, it's unique to be able to exchange ideas with so many different types of entities. In the Midwest, we think of our cooperatives as grain cooperatives or supply cooperatives, providing us everything from fuel, seed, energy, crop protection. But there are also entities like Blue Diamond Almonds, Sunkist. We have insurance cooperatives. There's all types in the broad spectrum that will meet underneath the one umbrella. Certainly, though, all focused on agricultural issues.
And I know the issues of interest are pretty broad as well. So what were some of the most important topics that were discussed that are of particular interest to your members who are primarily in the Midwest?
Well, we went out this year in June and had the opportunity to talk about the Water Resources Reform and Development Act. I think you know that many people just refer to that as WRDA, its acronym. And that is the overarching legislation and now in law that would reform some of the ways that the Inland Waterway Trust Fund projects are funded by the Army Corps of Engineers. In fact, it provided over $100 million in new funding because we were able to change the Olmsted Lock and how it is funded down there on the Ohio River. And I think that's an amazing amount of money to talk about, and it will mean a tremendous amount more for projects across the country. It did help move up in the schedule of things, the construction of new 1,200-foot locks on Mississippi and Illinois rivers. But what we still need to do, and the missing component, was the funding mechanism that would be 9 cents of additional fee on a gallon of diesel fuel that towboats would use. And that would move the construction, if we were able to get that fee implemented, it would move the construction start date all the way up to 2020 for new 1,200-foot locks. And that's something that there have been producers, Cindy, that have worked over 20 years to try to get this accomplished. And it's just a difficult matter to try to raise funding at a federal government level in this climate. But I think people are continue to understand this, and we may see some opportunities here in the Senate if they pass the highway bill before September.
Well, and I know that agricultural interests were very pleased when that WRDA bill was finally passed and signed by the president, but you mentioned the Olmsted Project, and it seems like when you compare that $100 million in funding, that project has cost way more than that and has taken years so far, and it's not anywhere near complete yet.
You are right. It is, the Olmsted Project alone is around $2 billion it's approaching. They tried a new program and for how they were pouring concrete in the wet instead of using the dry dock system. And I think that was major frustration, and they wouldn't change the way that was done. And they wanted to continue to try an innovative method, which I understand innovation, but there always is a price for that. So, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers tries to do the best it can. We just had a disagreement and difference of opinion on how that was being done. I think what's important to note, too, is we hear a lot of discussion about how polarized Congress is and they can't get anything done. Let us remember they passed the Farm Bill on a bipartisan basis. They passed this bill on a bipartisan basis, signed by the president this year. A 91 out of 100 senators and 413 out of 435 representatives. So things can happen in this Congress. It's just a matter of the right things happening, isn't it?
Yeah, they can happen, but the other issue that I know you talked about was the Waters of the United States, which is an EPA-proposed rule, which has now polarized Congress in a lot of ways, and one issue that seems to be holding up funding legislation, appropriations bills.
Yes, there is. There's been quite a discussion about the Waters of the United States, which is a proposed rule by the United States Environmental Protection Agency, but has a number of ramifications that involve a number of other regulations. And the short of it is, right in, up until 2006, and even post-2006, the Supreme Court had a ruling that if you were considered a Water of the United States, which is a highly regulated water body, you needed to have meet the definition of either being commercially navigable. And, of course, it's pretty clear what is commercially navigable. Then the expansion tried to occur. A court case was then put in front of the Supreme Court, the questioning whether a wetland was significantly connected to a water of the United States around Michigan. And the Supreme Court, in their ruling, seemed to be pretty clear that there was not a significant connection. Therefore, the isolated wetland is not regulated by the Army Corps of Engineers and federal government. Property owners were free to do what they please. And that upset a number of interests. They then had continued their work since 2006 and finally came out, were successful, in my opinion, of releasing and having this rule shaped and framed to where there is a water of the United States. And while some people may say, boy, I don't know if I'm tuning in on this, why does it impact me? Well, when you start thinking about the way this definition is written, and here's where it impacts the everyday landowner. If I am a farmer and I have a hydric soil, that could categorize me into a water of the United States. Hydric soil would be some presence of either a type of plant that is water-loving or specific types of soil conditions. If we're near or adjacent to streams, they can be intermittent, ephemeral, and those means that under a hard rain condition, you'll see them. The rest of the time, you will not. That could be a water of the United States. There's setback distances. There's a number of prescriptive proposed regulations that you need to follow. And there is a confusing message coming out because I know that US EPA is saying, hey, farm community, we've exempted you. You have 56 practices that are exempt. We're not interested in regulating you. Yet when you read the details of the language, Cindy, the language would, we feel, and I think many in agriculture would feel, that it could leave into interpretation in the future that unless you prescriptively follow 56 farming practices that now we have a list of, where currently we have no list of any farming practice. We would only have 56 farming practices. Yes, they're broad-based, but could there be a lawsuit filed in which you're not following a very specific conservation practice that you are required to follow to re-exempt? And by the time you work your way through this, that's called simplification at the federal level. I think everybody feels that they simply understand what they're doing today and how that's a normal farming practice. So a significant disagreement, and you are correct. Members of Congress are getting involved in this rulemaking.
A couple of other issues you talked about. One of them was tax issues. What are some of the tax concerns that that GROWMARK representatives brought up to their lawmakers in Washington?
I think what we know is in 2013, there were a number of tax credits. It was just around 54 tax credits that had expired on December 31st, 2013. And for those who produce biofuel, particularly biodiesel, it's been somewhat of an annual to every 2 year initiative where you have to go back and seek approval for extending the dollar a gallon tax credit. And what we feel was very important as there was discussions over tax reform, whether it happened this year or not. Obviously, it doesn't look like this year, but certainly there's a lot of discussion in the next few years. We'll need to address tax reform issues. We will need to address the tax credits that expired. And there has been a difference of opinion between the Senate and the House, and that's what we were discussing. The Senate passed all 54 tax credits immediately extended for 2 years. The House said they wanted to go through them individually. And there's some significant and important provisions. For example, there's a provision for Section 179 expenses that allows small capital purchases to be expensed and deducted immediately for up to $250,000 a year for those investments. That's important to small business to be able to make investments into their future. There's a provision for cooperatives that talks about how patronage can be either shared with the member company cooperative or passed on to the farmer, whatever the cooperative members feel gives them the best tax treatment for their particular cooperative. That's important to see extended. And then also the biodiesel tax credit would be something that we would like to see extended. So that is still on the plate of Congress for potential action. As I said, the House and Senate have different perspectives. We're hopeful that they would come together here on some type of discussion for overall funding of the federal government, in which they'll have to either just prior to the election or just after.
Well, I've also been hearing more talk about going after the estate tax again and trying to get that done away with. I know that's a really important issue for farmers. Did you talk about that at all?
Well, we didn't at this point in time, but that's certainly listed on our plate. When you talk about tax reform, and if you're going to restructure the tax code to simplify, make more streamlined and more transparent, I think that certainly small business and farmers are very interested in seeing permanency in any type of deduction for the estate tax. And as we pass on generational operations from one family to the next, there's no need in taxing it twice. And they make and earn their money, they pay taxes on their earnings, and then when they're trying to pass a business from one generation to the next, whether you're in town or you're out in the country on a farm, that's something that should be able to be done between the generations without the burden of taxation upon someone's death. And that's something that's been very well established in the small business and agricultural communities for a number of years. We were successful in increasing the exemption thresholds, but there's a lot of people who simply feel that's just not a fair tax.
Another issue is GMO labeling and the effort on the part of agricultural interests for there to be some kind of a federal law to avoid a patchwork of like local and state regulations governing foods made from genetically modified crops. Tell us a little bit about that.
There's a lot of interest in that, the issue of how should food be labeled? What should the labels say? And as you pointed out, consumers are always interested in their food products. And, you know, we want to see transparency and a clear understanding based on science and the regulations that have provided stability of understanding here in the United States. I think one of the benefits of our Food and Drug Administration and their regulatory process is that it is on a nationwide basis. You and I can go from coast to coast to Alaska or Hawaii or any of our territories, and we can understand that food will be safe, it will be labeled properly, we'll be able to read the nutrition label and understand what we're purchasing. And what happens is, on a state-by-state basis, there's been efforts to label food that they contain genetically modified organisms. And we understand that there may be an interest in that. If any type of labeling would occur on that basis, one, it needs to be scientific, and two, it needs to be at the national level, not a patchwork of 50 different provisions. I think if any of us understood selling food products across this country and the significant cost and just efficiency or availability challenges we would face if we had to meet 50 different labeling provisions that changed all the time. And I think that's why it's very important we picked this issue up and are joined with so many in the agricultural and food sector industries, the grocery manufacturers, I know a number of agricultural associations, as well as the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, are very interested to see if anything happens on food labeling, that it be at the national level, have a very scientific basis, and the stringent testing and safety procedures process followed that we know today.
Well, Chuck, we're halfway through the year at this point, and Congress actually has a less than a month's worth of days left in session before the November elections. So practically speaking, what issues do you think might be a priority with them, and how much do you think they can really get done between now and November?
Well, we know that the highway transportation bill and its funding mechanism will have to be addressed. It needs action prior to September 1st. And as you pointed out, they're going to be on a 4th of July recess and working and hopefully visiting it with constituents back in their district. They go back to Congress for a brief period of time, in which then they go for the August in-district work period, where they go back into their districts until after Labor Day. And then you start penciling that out in an election year. There's not very many days of Congress that Larry would be in session in September. So you will hear and we will watch a tremendous amount of discussion over how highway funding should be conducted, whether they're going to pass a short-term or provision or try to go with a one-year provision to continue the highway construction projects that we have. And I think we all know, with the severe winters we've had, particularly in the northern half of the United States, we need pothole repair, We need bridge reconstruction. So I think that they understand that need is on the platform and plate, and that's something that they're going to have to address. We'll probably have to have a continuing resolution, in which that continuing resolution, they've tried to work through their appropriations process. There's 13 bills that should have been acted on. About half of them have had action. It looks like, as you pointed out, compressed time schedule, election year, may very well result in another one of those instances where they take the current funding levels and extend them for a given period of time. Now, that may be till just after the election with their agreement, or maybe till just after the first of the year. But I would anticipate to see something along those lines. And then that is the opportunity for the tax extension provisions to be put into place. So I think that there is certainly a lot of activity that can happen. As you pointed out, though, volumetrically, the amount of legislation that may be passed that is significant is going to be very limited with the time they have.
Well, and also I wonder with this immigration situation going on with all these unaccompanied minors coming in, it seems like that's coming back up to the fore, and it's going to be something Congress is going to start addressing again, at least having hearings and whatnot. I know immigration has been important for agriculture, but what do you think about this situation and how this might play out as far as immigration reform is concerned?
It does stimulate the talk. It stimulates the hearings by Congress. It will be really challenged with the way the Congress is established at this point in time to see action until after the election. You know, there's always momentum swings, and there's early polling, and there's a lot of discussion. And there's a sense some of the bodies out there, particularly the Republicans, they have a sensation whether they would take the Senate or not. That can be debated by all of us, and we could probably debate that for the rest of the day. The point is, though, it does feel as though there's some sense that there's a mood shift in the electorate here in the United States. If that's the case, you may not be as motivated to pass immigration, but you could certainly see the need for that. And you've pointed out there's pressure points, and we just reviewed that there can be action taken even during these difficult times. It would take something special, though, I feel. I feel it's more likely to happen after November if it's going to happen. And there also needs to be some discussions, I think, from the administration with the legislative leaders so they develop and reignite their basis of trust. We hear that word talked about and thrown about during this immigration debate. I'm not making an assessment on who needs to trust who. I'm just stating that they need to come to some level of trust between themselves so they can reach agreement.